Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. What does the future look like? By melding business acumen and innovative technology, Deloitte can help you build the future only you can imagine. They can help engineer solutions for your business reality today and your vision for tomorrow, to get you to a world where you don't just dream it, you build it. See how you can engineer advantage with Deloitte at deloitte.com/us/engineeringadvantage.
Support for Pivot comes from ServiceNow. By now, you've probably heard about AI. You might even be sick of hearing about it. But despite all the hype, it's not always clear how AI can help your business. ServiceNow has some ideas. With their intelligent platform, they can put AI to work across your company, improving customer experiences, helping non-coders code, accelerating your IT team's productivity, and resolving HR cases faster. So work can actually work better for everyone. So stop the hype and start putting AI to work. Go to servicenow.com/genAI to see why the world works with ServiceNow.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher.
And this is Scott Galla, and I'm here to announce that I've just declared war on Norway via Twitter. Watch out, Norwegians! Public policy via Twitter.
What are you going to do to Norway? I'm coming for those angry
Norwegians.
Why? What did they do to you,
oil-rich, nice people.
Except have fantastic hair. They have good hair.
Their cod or whatever it is they... What is it? What's awesome? What are Norwegians known for? What's the Norwegian cuisine du jour?
I don't know. I haven't been to Norway ever.
Oh, it's nice.
I don't know.
Every Northern European country is sort of, you go there and you're like, these people get it. They just have nicer lives. The people are better looking.
So that's why you want to invade them?
No, I was making light of the president's errant use of a platform.
Yes, of Twitter. I understand what you were doing. So let's discuss that. Trump tweeted that he would attack 52 sites that are important to Iran, including cultural sites. He also informed Congress under the War Powers Act, I guess, that he was going to do what he was going to do using Twitter. And he said, this is this is the way I'm going to inform you of this, which was kind of nuts. Usually it's a little different from a day that will live in infamy, which was a speech that Franklin Roosevelt gave. On Twitter, he's using it pretty much to conduct whatever he's doing. And Congress sort of is sitting on their hands nearby, not knowing what to do. So what do you think about this, Scott? I know you don't like to wade into politics, but this is the story of the week, essentially.
Yeah, well, I got a lot here. I think there's a lot around strategy. Let's just work backwards from announcing he's on Twitter he was going to attack 52 cultural sites. That is a war crime. And Robert McNamara, the Secretary of Defense during the Vietnam years, who's actually a brilliant guy, said that you can't defeat an enemy without really empathizing with them. So let's try to empathize a little bit with the Iranians, whether you think the war is justified or the conflict or the what could break into a war is justified. 1952, the CIA orchestrates the coup and they overthrow a democratically elected leader there and we install our guy who's corrupt. So the Iranians, bottom line, just don't like us much. And if we were to announce via Twitter, or better yet, if the Iranians were to announce via Twitter that, okay, over the next 90 days, we're going to execute a cyber attack or an act of military intervention or terrorism on a public university, an amusement park, Monticello, and a tech campus—
Yep.
How would we react to that? There is nobody at home with a whiteboard and a pen going, on a risk-adjusted basis, what happens with these decisions and who garners or cedes advantage? These strategically are just
you know
the stupidest
like?
Decisions in the world.
You. Do you know who you sound like today?
Who's
Tucker
that?
Carlson.
Tucker's right on this issue. 100%.
Well, it's interesting. Who's benefiting here? It's really, but let's get back to the Trump thing. And using the platforms again to govern is really fascinating. I don't know what to say about it. I don't know if you should take them off Twitter or not take them. A lot of people are calling for that.
What do you do?
Nothing.
What do you think
Nothing.
Twitter does? I don't know what they can do.
Nothing.
Yeah.
What do you do? Take them. You don't take them off.
Can't.
You don't.
It's president.
It doesn't say you can't do that.
Yeah.
Right. He specializes. As it doesn't say you can't.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what you do. I don't know if you like. There are a lot of people are saying, "Oh, he's threatening violence. He's threatening this." And of course he is. But what do you do? Like, I think the stuff he did about the cultural sites is just ridiculous because he's actually committing crimes in front of people, which is his kind of MO. Years from now, it'll be used in court, I suppose, depending depending on what happens. But I think one of the things that is disturbing is that he's governing by it. And he's been doing it since that he did the Commerce Department thing. He did things like transgender people in the military. And so he's using Twitter as his governing vehicle, as he's used it for his campaign vehicle. And it's the same, one and the same thing. And I think that's really fascinating.
Strange.
And I don't know what to do. What would you do if you were Jack Dorsey?
I don't, you know, the bottom line is they're in an impossible situation. And I agree with you. I don't think they can do anything. But I mean, I apologize for regressing into general strategy here, but look at what they've done here.
I like General Scott Galloway.
With the JCPOA, with the Iranian nuclear deal, the Europeans and the Americans had some leverage over the U.S., and we were starting to talk again. And it felt like both sides were making body language that they wanted to have greater diplomacy. And all of a sudden, with that greater diplomacy and some sympathy towards the West, you had a younger generation of Iranians. I grew up in L.A. Some of my best friends, I know this when people say it, the Iranian culture is a super impressive culture. The Iranians I know are more American than almost any immigrants I know. They value education. They like to make money. They're industrious. They're smart. They have incredible respect for culture. This is an impressive culture and an impressive people. And you had a young cohort that was starting to protest in the streets. They didn't like the conservative hardliners. And what have we done? We have handed a gift to the conservative hardliners. Everyone is now rallying around them. And we had given them license to attack a nation that is run by a guy who is under impeachment for high crimes and misdemeanors by one of the branches of government, has a rules of populace, presides over a populace that is not going to go into the Middle East a third time. So we are just flaccid. Yeah. We are running up to these guys, forcing them to respond. We have special ops. We have special ops posts and bases all over the Middle East that are vulnerable now. They could fire rockets into Israel. They could mess with the Straits of Hormuz. They could cyber attack medical facilities in the U.S. We have many vulnerabilities right now.
I think cyber security is going to be the real issue. They've already started, and I think Iran has been a big player. We focus a lot on the Russians, but Iran has been a big player in cyber attacks, and I think that's definitely going to be something. One of the things I spent time explaining to my kid this, he was like, well, why? This guy was terrible, the general they killed, and as a terrorist, is 100% a killer and a terrorist. But it plays right into their hands. You're right.
But
which one do you want to pick to kill of these terrible people running Iran? But you're right. It just has no strategy. If there wasn't any, why would you think there was any strategy? It's totally impulsive. And I think what the best story I think of all, and then let's get to other topics, is the Time story about how the government, the people from the Defense Department, gave him 10 options or whatever, how many options they give the president. And Obama and George Bush George Bush Part 2 had passed on this option. They always put it on there, like, here's the crazy option number 10, and he goes right to the crazy option. And what do they do? They shouldn't put it on there. They shouldn't give him the idea to do it. That's what's amazing, is that he went everyone in the Defense Department off the record is telling the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and Washington Post, this is crazy, the cultural sites. This is crazy having attacked him. But they did it anyway. And then they don't talk on the record. I'm like, is someone going to speak up on the record that this is insanity? And of course they're not.
There's so much that's really frightening here, because greatness is in the agency of others. There is a wisdom of crowds, and he is clearly not listening to even second-order security analysts or NSA analysts or CIA analysts who might say, you know what, somebody in the room raised their hand and said, okay, there is a moral, a legal, and a strategic justification for taking out Soleimani. He was the entity, the strategist behind a lot of proxy attacks that killed Americans. I get it. I'm glad he's dead. The question is, should they have done it in Baghdad? And you know, Dick Cheney and all these people, when they go back to Iraq, they would always start their defense, or Prime Minister Tony Blair, with, well, I think the world is better with Saddam Hussein dead. No, he's not. Bring him back. An awful man. I don't believe in heaven and hell, but would serve time in hell, no doubt. We are worse off because he's dead. And with Soleimani killed in Baghdad, we are worse off. And the most frightening thing here is he is clearly not listening to anybody at the CIA. I know people at the NSA. I know people at the CIA. They are way too smart to have recommended this course of action. So we have a rogue president without the support. He goes to Lindsey Graham. What does that mean? And doesn't inform Democratic senators, regardless of political bias here. If he needs money to fight the war that he might have catalyzed, he's not going to get it. So he's every day he speaks louder and cuts
it's
a stick
really
in
interesting.
Half.
It's really, especially the backdrop of the impeachment hearings that are coming back this week. That's going to obviously take attention. And Nancy Pelosi still hasn't delivered the articles of impeachment to the Senate yet. So, and just right now, as I was coming in, apparently John Bolton's willing to testify if he's subpoenaed, which he's not going to be, which was interesting. This whole thing is like the wheels are coming off the bus, but we'll see where it goes. I hate to move on to something so ridiculous, but the Golden Globes, of course, took place, which was fascinating.
Nice
which
segue.
Thank you. Which is fascinating that it didn't cover, it didn't talk a lot about Trump through the whole time. Usually he's been the topic of Hollywood's ire quite a bit. But actually, the tech companies got whacked at Golden Globes.
Did you see the opening, though? Did you see Ricky Gervais's opening?
Yes, about Apple. Which one?
Well, he just
about Netflix.
You said they didn't talk about
ISIS had a streaming service.
He didn't talk about Trump. The reason they didn't talk about Trump was he summarized it perfectly. He said, okay, if ISIS started a streaming video platform, you'd have their agent call them. So let's do us all a favor. If you get on stage, you get an award. Regarding politics, just shut the fuck up and get off the stage. None of you have the moral authority, much less the education or the domain expertise to begin using this platform as a means of talking about politics, as we, of course, talk about politics on a tech podcast. But anyways, I watched it. What was interesting for me about watching the Golden Globes was I started watching a lot of it vis-a-vis Twitter. I didn't have the patience to get through the program, so I was watching a lot of the clips. And I wonder if Twitter is starting to do to TV what Facebook and Google have done to newspapers and print. But it was, I thought
it's a news delivery service. It's such a successful news delivery service, I think.
Yeah, it really is. Did you watch the Golden Globes?
I didn't. I watched it on Twitter.
Yeah, there you go.
That's exactly right.
And what were your favorite moments?
I watched the good parts. I was fascinated that so many attacks on tech. I thought that was interesting. It's sort of finally funneling down, you know, and the fact that so many tech companies were up for awards and didn't win them. Netflix only got two wins out of 34 nominations for Laura Dern for Marriage Story. She was fantastic in it. And Olivia Colman for The Crown. Irishman didn't win. The Two Popes, Unbelievable. All kinds of shows didn't win.
Fleabag won. Best show on television last year. Fleabag.
Yes, but it was interesting they didn't win. But the attack on Apple being a sweatshop, Netflix ISIS one, the Facebook Sacha Baron Cohen one.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that guy?
We'll play it later.
Oh my God.
He had the best line of the
night. Oh my God.
I love it.
We so
got
to
roll
with Sasha.
I got to get him to come to Code.
Oh my gosh. That guy's a genius. That guy is a genius. And he's doing a lot of good.
Here's what I thought the goal. It seemed like, given the war stuff that's going on, I was like, oh, God, these people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, hardly pointful. I think Ricky Gervais was thinking that. Like, oh, this group of people in this time and place is just, like, kind of peripheral, I guess. Peripheral is what I thought was interesting about it. That's what it felt a little bit.
But there's actually research. My colleague, a gangster colleague, Professor Adam Alter, has appointments at the psychology and at the business school, has done great research showing that in times of stress, comedy surge in popularity, and in good times, everybody wants to watch, you know, Ingrid Bergman films about everybody dying and sad. And I think, unfortunately, comedies are about to become a lot more popular. And I'm curious. I'm actually, for the first time in a while, physically worried and tense and anxious about what's going on. And I don't know if it's my age or that I'm actually just more aware and we should be worried. But I remember thinking, I really want to watch the Golden Globes because I need to get my mind off.
Anyway, we've got to go to a break. When we get back, we'll be doing wins and fails and a new segment called Mandatory Happiness.
Support for Pivot comes from the Optimistic Outlook podcast. What can a microgrid on Chicago's South Side teach us about the future of energy? How can we fight to make clean air a basic human right? And why are there almost a million open manufacturing jobs right now? There's only a few people in the world with the expertise, access, and perspective to give real answers to those questions. And Barbara Humpton, the CEO of Siemens USA, is one of them. On her podcast, The Optimistic Outlook, you get a seat at the table with Barbara as she shares the latest insights on breakthroughs in manufacturing technologies that are reshaping our reality. Barbara's guests include thought leaders, industry mavericks, and researchers who all share actionable information and ideas about the technologies that are creating our future. Recent episodes highlight how new technology paired with sustainability efforts has radically changed workplaces across the spectrum, from hospitals and energy plants to transportation systems. Other fascinating topics include sustainable beer brewing, the power of 3D printing, and the incredible potential of self-healing concrete. To learn more, join the dozens and dozens of people who tune into this podcast. Listen to The Optimistic Outlook wherever you consume your podcasts.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, we're back. Wins and fails. Scott, why don't you go first?
You want me to go first?
Yes, okay, I can go first if you like.
I mean, my win. My win is Sacha Baron Cohen. Let's roll tape.
The hero of this next movie is a naive, misguided child who spreads Nazi propaganda and only has imaginary friends. His name is Mark Zuckerberg. Sorry, this is an old intro for The Social Network.
Sasha,
who's your win?
My win is Richard Plepler, who is going to Apple to work on Apple TV+. I was correct about my prediction. He's doing it through his company himself. He's going to be making things exclusively for them. Obviously, he left AT&T's. After AT&T bought Warner Media, he hated those people, just pretty much hated them. But he's responsible for things like Game of Thrones and Big Little Lies and Sopranos, everything. So Richard Plepler's a terrific maker of TV. So here's hoping that Apple will make better TV by hiring him. I think that's a win for them.
Yeah, it is. That guy on top of the assets or the capital that Tim Cook and Apple are willing to throw at this, we're going to have more great original scripted television.
He's got, everybody loves Richard Plepler, including me. And I think he has a network. He's got the curiosity. You know, some people are like, oh, he's later in his career, but God, I've never seen someone more enthusiastic. You know what I mean? He's still like engaged and I find him to be highly relevant. And I think the stuff he makes has been, you know, just, it's interesting. He and I often talk about the stuff he missed, Homeland. And I think he passed on that. He just is. He's very smart. He's missed a few things, but he then recovers really quickly. Like, I think they passed on Billions, which went to Showtime, and then he made Succession, which you could argue is better. I'm really interested to see what he creates, because I think Apple hasn't really put enough real talent to the money they have yet. So, anyway.
Good,
what's
Richard.
What's your fail, Scott?
Yeah, I don't have a fail. I'm trying to stay optimistic. I'm going to skip fail today because I'm not. Okay, I'll do a fail. I think the biggest mistake, and I can't help it, I'm going to talk about the Trump administration. I think the biggest mistake of this administration, the bigotry, the misogyny, the lack of empathy, that's all incredibly distressing. The dangerous stupidity of eroding in what is just a couple years or 3 years, what is probably the most powerful alliance in the history of modern civilization, and that's the North Atlantic Treaty. Did you notice how none of the Europeans came to our aid? They all basically said, boss, this is your mess. I mean, none of them. We have taken incredible armies, intelligence, people with shared values, and we've just said, we no longer need you. And we've offended them. And now we are running around the world again, speaking super loudly with a stick that is splintering and chipping and getting smaller and smaller. And I think that will go down as the biggest failure of this errant 3.5 years, as is taking our friends, people that we stand shoulder to shoulder with, and just saying, you know what, we don't need you, we don't like you. It's a fail of epic proportions. Oh, God, Kara, can we start drinking?
No, we can't. This war has really shook you up. It very much shake you up.
Well,
it's really interesting.
Unfortunately, I'm thoughtful, and I can do math. It literally appears none of these folks have actually written out a scenario plan on a risk-adjusted basis. What are the likely responses here? It just
Yep.
I think every professor of strategy in the world or every game theorist is like scratching
their
head.
There was a theory. There was someone I tweeted one of the theories, like it was 10 or 12 different things, and it was super helpful, but it was disturbing. Like everyone's super disturbed because it's someone just and the part that's most disturbing is that the people left in the White House are literally the dregs. Like we've got the dregs and inexperienced people there making these decisions, and you just the idea that Jared Kushner is making decisions on this on my life and the lives of my kids. You know, my son actually, who's 17, he's turning 18, was like, do you think I'll be drafted? He said that to me. Like, I was like, I don't know. Like, I hope not. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was just, it was really, I'd never thought of that. And it was interesting that he was already there, right? You know, the idea that we're going to have a war.
I have a draft story. When I was, I think 16 or 17, we invaded Grenada. And my mom freaked out and got me British citizenship. I became a dual citizenship such that I wouldn't have to leave for Canada. I didn't even know what she was talking about. I didn't know what Grenada was. And about the moment... About the moment we heard from the Queen that I was now a dual citizen, Britain declared war on the Falkland Islands, and I got a notice saying that I needed to register for Her Majesty's Royal
Navy. That was, what, 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Jesus.
So my mom accidentally almost got me working for the Royal Navy. But anyways.
Oh, my God. Scott in the Army would be
That just doesn't work, does it? That does not work.
Anyway.
Yeah.
You would be in the break. You would be in the break.
Work.
All right. My fail is this story in the, I just had a big argument on CNBC about it. New York wanted Amazon HQ2 so badly than we realized. According to the Wall Street Journal, state officials offered $800 million more in incentives that was previously known, including tax incentives to hire more people of color, promote diversity, and pay their part of employees' salaries. They were going to pay part of employees' salaries in different parts of the state. It wasn't just New York. You know, and at the same time, New York Times had a story this weekend about how many more tech companies are going to the west side of New York City, and Manhattan. So I had an argument with David Faber, who thought it was a mistake to not have allowed Amazon to create that campus, and they should have done the incentives. And then everyone on Twitter was attacking for me for being a socialist, which I was like, no, I don't want to give rich people money. Anyway, what do you think of this?
Well, Kara, you're not the socialist. You're the only capitalist in the room. And what CNBC and David Faber are is they're the worst type of socialists. They're cronyists. They want national champions and have decided that companies they think are cool should get certain benefits. I've along with several talented people, created a company in New York that had 140 high-paying jobs. And according to Cuomo and de Blasio, that means I'm entitled to $17 million in subsidies, which I would spend on a helicopter pad, a Bombardier Challenger 300 with Proline 21 Rockwell Avionics, and a Bell H-43 helicopter. That is literally what I could have bought, according to de Blasio, David Faber, and Mario Governor Cuomo, that what my company was entitled to. But instead, we say, okay, the company that is the third most valuable company in the world, we're going to be socialists and we're going to pick winners and losers. So when you walk into a room with David Faber and CNBC, there's a capitalist in the room. That makes them the other guys. They're the worst type of socialists. They're cronyists, national champions picking winners and losers. Mario Cuomo or Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio are literally going to go down as the worst poker players in history. And by the way, all the jobs they promised in exchange for soaking our municipal fire, police, and school districts, all those jobs are coming here anyways, because this is where Bezos wants to roll. They have already hired 1,500 additional incremental people for Amazon, another 500 people for AWS. They are on track to hire more people than they promised should we give them the billions of dollars. This is Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio are terrible capital allocators. They're terrible CEOs of the municipal treasury. You're the capitalist in the room, Kara.
Thank you. Will you go on Twitter and say that? Because I'm being attacked by all the men of Twitter because I'm a lady socialist.
I will declare war on them. I will attack their
Please,
cultural
I need
sites.
You. I need you to be the Mandalorian there. All right, we're going to go to a new set. We're going to skip predictions today and go. We're going to do Friday predictions. But we have a new section that we're trying out called Mandatory Happiness. This is for you, Scott, because you need a little lift. I see that.
All right, thank you.
What's happening here. I want to test out something. We're testing out all kinds of new segments because we have so much. We have twice a week. We got to come up with new gigaws for you fans of ours. So it's not related to Algebra of Happiness, but it kind of is. Like, so the news is stressful, so depressing. You're clearly in need of a drink at this time of morning. I want you to take a minute and share one positive thing, and you go first.
You want me to go first on this?
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. So I think role models are really important. And my one of my role models is actually my book agent, a guy named Jim Levine. He's this tall, handsome guy. I think he's in his 70s, who is just great at what he does, married for 40 years, super into his family, works out every day, just the guy I want to be as I get older. I have a tremendous amount of respect for this guy and does something he loves and makes a really good living at it. And he was started his career as a child psychologist. And I asked him, I said, look, I feel like I'm an average to good dad. I aspire to be a good to great dad. And I said, what piece of advice would you have as someone who studied child psychology mm-hmm. for the bulk of your career? And he said, you know, there's so much conflicting data out there, but the one kind of absolute for me is always try and find moments of engagement with your children. Find something that you share and then make them rote and repeat them, whether it's Tuesday pizza night, always reading to them a certain book. I've been telling both my son's stories about my parents immigrating to America. And over the week in Montana, my son discovered this wonderful new program called Lost in Space. It's the reboot of the old series.
Yes, I watched it when I was a kid. I love the show.
Oh, my gosh.
Will Robinson.
This is a gift. So just a shout out to Molly Parker as Maureen Robinson, Maxwell Jenkins as Will Robinson, Mina Sundwall as Penny Robinson, Parker Posey, who's great in this, as Dr. Smith. She plays the crazy Dr. Smith.
The crazy gay Dr. Smith.
That's right. And Toby Stevens is John Robinson in this incredible reboot. And it just shows you what's happened to television.
Netflix. Yeah, it's Netflix.
They spent $80 million on this thing. The special effects. The thing you're going to love about this show is not only is a way to create moments of engagement with your boys, but the characters in it are really strong female leaders. So they have they just did this right. It's great effects, great storytelling, and for someone at my generation, your generation, you just start wanting to like it, and they give you a ton of reasons to like it. So moments of engagement with my sons, that is my mandatory moment of happiness.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go with a movie, too.
Nice.
Having gone to several movies this weekend, I went to see Star Wars, and I also went to see Bombshell, which I loved, by the way. That was a terrific movie, too.
You like that?
I did. It's not doing as well, but it was great. It was a great movie. Is the reboot, the second Top Gun. I'm sorry. I love Top Gun so, so much. I hate myself for it, but I love it. And they showed a new trailer for it, which I loved. And, you know, a lot of volleyball playing with their shirts off, stuff like that. Even though I'm gay, I love it. I love the whole thing. And even though I really can't stand Tom Cruise, I really love Tom Cruise. It's terrible. It's a terrible conundrum for me.
He's a movie star. Tom Cruise is a movie star. No doubt about it.
Yeah,
he is a movie star.
And he's like, there's some couple of lines in it that are so hokey and it's so good. And then he comes up, they lift him up onto the deck and they play the music and he's on the, I don't know. I just love it. I'm so happy. I'm going to be
so sad. Wait, there's a new remake of Top Gun?
Yeah, not a new remake, a part two. It's 25 years later and he's training the new recruits, including Miles Teller.
Oh, you know what would be more fun is to have drunk, ugly Val Kilmer back. That would make the movie.
No, because he's like, he did not age well. Tom Cruise has aged well.
He hasn't aged. It makes you want to be a Scientologist. I don't know what they're doing there, injecting sheep embryo into his neck or something. He looks no different.
I will have a better one next week, but movie previews made me happy this week.
I owned you on that one. Moments of engagement with the dog and his little dogs.
You did. I like my kids, too. But anyway, it's time for us to go.
Okay.
This has been both funny and also touching.
I'm freaked out, Kara. Hold me.
Don't worry.
I am freaked out.
Did you get my present?
You keep talking about that. I hate it when people send me gifts.
It's in Florida. It was delivered.
I'm terrible at gifts. I don't open mail.
I used UPS or Postal Service. It is at your house in Florida where you told me to send it. I sent you the gift you wanted, and you did not get
it. The gift I wanted? Lonnie Anderson? Wait, what's the gift I wanted? Lonnie!
Besides the Edward Snowden book.
It's WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yes, she was very cute then.
It's Lonnie Anderson hand in hand with Barbara Eden. Here for the dog.
No one knows who Lonnie Anderson is.
Jeannie, get to your bottle.
Listen to me.
Go ahead.
Listen to me.
Okay.
I sent you a present.
All right.
You need to get it in Florida. When are you going to Florida next?
This will be a win-win because I'll turn them lesbian.
You are going to when I would like knowledge of my present.
Oh my God, Rebecca is shaking.
I got
her
no present.
That's
from
definitely
you.
Not going to make the show.
Yes, it is.
That's
yes,
on
it
the cutting
is. Anyway,
room
it's
floor.
Time to go. We're going to be back Friday. We're going to do predictions then, and we're going to have all new features. We're going to have a lot of different features. We're going to do therapy of Scott every week, things like that. We're going to do all kinds of fun things.
I need it.
You do need it. Meanwhile, if you have any questions about a story you're hearing in the news for us to answer next week or this week, send to pivot@voxmedia.com. Scott, would you like to read the credits today?
My credits go to you for owning CNBC, those socialist bitch cronies. You go on there, you thwack them up the head.
The old white men who watch it are mad at Kara Swisher. Just go on and defend me, please. Now read the credits, Scott Galloway, General Galloway.
Today's show was produced by Rebecca Sinanis and Eric Johnson. Our executive producer is Erica Anderson, who, by the way, I got to spend some wonderful time with Erica and her uber cool girlfriend. That was one of my highlights. That was one of my wins.
You were all in like rich people land in Montana skiing, right? Well, I was working, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, poor you. Cry you a river. Anyways, as you go on CNBC, special thanks to Rebecca Castro and Drew Burrows. If you have any questions or comments, please reach out to us and also download us, leave comments. Generally, just try and absorb all things us from any platform possible. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. There's nothing wrong with America that can't be fixed with what's right with America. We will see you later in the week.